following is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, featuring the teaching of Pastor Alan Rogers. In the Metro Chattanooga area, we invite you to be our guest at any of our weekly worship services or visit us online at newsalembaptist.net. Now here's Pastor Alan.
Well, did you start anything new this year? I was reading this weekend about a gym owner over in England who decided he was not going to accept any new gym memberships during the month of January. And he had a pretty good reason for that. He said normally every year in January, he gets all these new memberships and all these new people flock into his gym. The problem is they clog up the space and they keep his regular customers from being able to work out. And that lasts for about a month. And then slowly over time, all these new people begin to fade away and things start to get back to normal. So now he says, I'm just going to avoid the whole problem. I'm not selling any new memberships in January. We're just going to keep things open for my regular customers. At the start of a new year, it's only natural to take stock of where you're at, to look at what's working and what's not, and what needs to change. But here's the thing. Resolutions only work if you follow through. We can't be like those January gym memberships. Now, the Lord blessed this church in 2024. This past year has been a year of regathering, rebuilding, and reviving. Now, don't get me wrong. We got a long ways to go. Okay? But with God's help, we made a lot of progress this past year. The question is, where do we go from here? To make progress on a journey, you really need to have some idea of what your destination is, right? You need to know where you're headed. A few years back, we as a church developed a statement of our preferred future, a vision for the church we wanted to become. Now, over the years, this has gotten tweaked a little bit, but you know, it's still a good statement, and it's a good vision. And it still can guide us to the future. So over the next few weeks, we're going to unpack this statement and compare it to the scripture. And we're going to see how this statement can continue to guide us to be the kind of church we want to be. The very first phrase in that statement says, we desire New Salem to become a healthy and thriving family of faith. What in the world does that mean? What does a healthy church look like? And how do we become one? Well, a lot of experts have offered a lot of different definitions over what a healthy church is. And I started to share some of those with you this morning, but you know what? I'm really a lot more interested in what Scripture says than what a whole bunch of other people's opinions are. The problem is, in the New Testament, we don't have a definitive list in neon lights that says, this is what a healthy church looks like. These are the characteristics of a healthy church. What we do have are some examples of churches that were healthy and operated in a healthy fashion. We also have some examples of churches who were not so healthy. In fact, that may be a really good place to start this morning, looking at the kind of church we do not want to be. And the poster child for unhealthy churches in the New Testament has got to be the church in Corinth, Greece, in the first century AD. And I encourage you to turn in your Bible right now to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. This was one of Paul's favorite churches. He was instrumental in helping this church get started. It was always very close to him, but it was also one of the churches that gave him the most grief. From what we can tell, Paul wrote at least 4 pastoral letters to this church, 2 of which we have preserved in the New Testament. In these 2 letters, he paints a picture of a church that was deeply divided and dysfunctional. And if we want to get an idea of what to avoid, the church at Corinth shows us. Now, note, the list I'm going to be sharing with you this morning, both on the healthy and the unhealthy churches, are not exhaustive, but they're comprehensive enough to give us the idea. And some of you are looking at that outline right now and saying, we're going to be here all day. Well, I'm going to dig in a little bit on this first part, but then we're going to move at a pretty fast clip after that. So just hang on. I timed this out. It should work out okay. An unhealthy church, judging by the example of the church at Corinth, is marked by, first of all, division and drama. Look at 1 Corinthians 1, verses 10 and 11. Paul writes, "Now I exhort you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all agree, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be made complete in the same mind and in the same judgment. For I've been informed concerning you, my brethren, by Chloe's people, that there are quarrels among you." One sign of an unhealthy church is that the congregation is divided into competing camps, which are always complaining about each other and criticizing each other. Now, part of this goes to human nature. Because of the sinfulness of our hearts, it's a natural thing for people to divide into cliques, clans, and competing factions. And you've heard me say this before, we all come into church as broken people. That's one of the reasons that we're drawn to church. We're trying to fix our brokenness, right? So we come into church as broken people. Some of us are more broken than others, but we're all broken. And when you get a whole bunch of broken people packed into tight proximity to each other and they're rubbing up against each other, first of all, you've got friction, but you've also got those jagged edges of our lives that we bring into this relationship, into this community. And that just compiles the pain we cause ourselves and we cause each other. And the result is an atmosphere characterized by criticism, complaining, and combativeness. Now, the gospel has the power to bring healing into that mix, to bring cooperation, to bring unity, but only when people determine to focus more on what brings them together than on what pushes them apart. So a church that is unhealthy is focused on the wrong things, and that leads to division and drama. And one of the reasons that unhealthy churches are so divided is because they're characterized by worldliness. Still in 1 Corinthians in chapter 2, verse 12. "Now we've received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit who is from God, so that we may know the things freely given to us by God, which things we also speak, not in words taught by human wisdom, but in those taught by the Spirit, combining spiritual thoughts with spiritual words. But a natural man doesn't accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, and he cannot comprehend them because they are spiritually appraised." This is a little sample of something Paul touches on throughout this letter. He draws this contrast between those who follow the lead of God's Spirit and those who are following the sinful inclinations of their hearts. And as the Apostle John warns us in 1 John 2:16, the natural motivations of this world are driven by selfishness, greed, and pride. That's worldliness. And too often that worldliness gets brought into the church. And we start doing things driven by the world's motivations and in the world's way instead of doing things that are led by God's Spirit and that honor the Spirit of Christ. And when we allow those motivations to drive our actions instead of being led by God's Spirit, the result is divisiveness and drama. And hand in hand with worldliness is the characteristic of spiritual immaturity. 1 Corinthians 3, verses 1 through 3. "And I, brethren, could not speak to you as spiritual men, but as to men of flesh, as to infants in Christ. I gave you milk to drink, not solid food, for you were not able to receive it. Indeed, now you're not able, for you're still fleshly. For since there's jealousy and strife among you, are you not fleshly? Are you not walking like mere men?" Now, a lot of you know, we got a couple of big dogs in our house. And we often refer to these dogs as the toddlers. Now, why do we call our dogs the toddlers? Well, when they want us to do something and we don't do it, then they tend to throw a tantrum, kind of like toddlers do. And then when we want them to do something and they don't want to do it, they do this passive-aggressive thing where they kind of dig their heels in and refuse to do it, kind of like human toddlers or teenagers, take your pick. So we call them the toddlers, you know, when they're acting like that. Toddlers are known for their immature behavior. That's one thing when a two-year-old throws a tantrum, but it's quite another when a full-grown adult does. But brothers and sisters, I have seen that happen in church. A lot of churches are full of spiritual toddlers. Now, thank God that Jesus accepts us just as we are, okay? But he also loves us too much to leave us that way. And the way this is supposed to work is that the longer we walk with Jesus, the more we come to resemble his character and the way he would do things. Unfortunately, a lot of people never leave the toddler stage. Mainly because one or two reasons they never truly gave themselves over to Jesus and they're still not really converted or born again, or because they refuse to be led by God's Spirit. They're still driven by those sinful worldly inclinations of their own hearts. A church full of spiritual toddlers is going to function pretty much the way a nursery full of human toddlers would. Which, if you haven't volunteered back there lately, unless you stay on top of things, what are you going to have? If you let the toddlers run the place, what are you going to have? Chaos and confusion. And unfortunately, there are a lot of churches where that pretty much is a good description of what goes on under their roof. Spiritual immaturity. And spiritual immaturity leads to a focus on preferences over purpose. Also in chapter 3, picking up verse 4, when one says, I'm of Paul, and another, I'm of Apollos, are you not mere men? What then is Apollos? And what is Paul? Servants through whom you believed, as the Lord gave opportunity to each one. So what's going on in Corinth is they're breaking into factions based on who their favorite preacher is. Well, I like this preacher. I like that preacher. And they pick somebody else. You know, there were all these different factions based on their preferences for their favorite preacher. And Paul goes on to say, talk about how ridiculous this is. He says, I planted, Apollos watered, God caused the growth. So then neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything but God who causes the growth. Whose church is it? It's Jesus' church. It's not my church, not your church. It's not Brother Ted's church. It's Jesus' church. Jesus sends you servants to help you fulfill his purpose. And those servants are equipped for a particular time, a particular season in the church's life. But you know what? The thing about most of us is we grow old, if we're fortunate, or we move on, or whatever. And so God raises up new people, and leadership changes. But this church remains Jesus' church. And we need to be focused on Jesus' purpose for this church, not my purpose, not your purpose. You know, the members at Corinth were more focused on promoting their favorite preachers than they were on pursuing the mission of God. And not a whole lot has changed in a whole lot of churches. In today's hedonistic, consumer-driven environment, how often are we more concerned with what kind of music do they use in worship, who the preacher is, what the children's ministry is like, than we are about whether or not our church is fulfilling the mission Christ gave it? I know people, some people, you know, they go to one church one week because they like the music, and they go to another church next week because they like the preacher. But they won't really commit to anywhere. Now, the next two characteristics are kind of an either-or phenomenon, okay? Some churches tend to lean more one way, some churches tend to lean more the other. And these characteristics reflect a problem of being unbalanced. Now, if you're driving down the road and one of your tires is unbalanced, what goes on? Your car doesn't have a very smooth ride, does it? If you allow that to go on long enough, it's going to cause other problems. Well, sometimes in life, we get unbalanced. We put more emphasis in one direction than we do in the other. And it causes problems. The problem in Corinth that this spiritual immaturity caused was a tolerance for immorality. You go to 1 Corinthians 5, verses 1 through 13. I'm not going to bother reading that. I encourage you to go read it yourself. But basically what was happening was in its collective immaturity, the Corinthian church was tolerating a man in their midst who apparently was conducting a very open affair with his own stepmother. And they're like, oh, well, you know. And Paul says, you know, even the pagans think that's taboo. Yet the Corinthian church was looking the other way. Maybe we ought to make the guy a deacon so he'll straighten up. You know, some churches become so infested with worldliness and spiritual maturity that they lose the ability to speak out on matters of right and wrong. The other side, though, is a stress on legalism over grace. That was the problem in the churches of Galatia. And again, I'm not going to read the whole passage, but in Galatians chapter 3, verses 1 through 6, Paul talks about this. In fact, the whole letter is really about this. The churches in Galatia wrestle with this opposite problem where they struggle with a type of religious legalism that downplayed the power of God's grace to transform people and to overcome sin and use guilt, shame, and fear to manipulate and control the people in the congregation. So that's the other cliff, the other ditch you can run into. We want to stay out of both of those ditches. And we want to keep our eyes focused on Jesus and following him. Now, we've talked a lot about the key characteristics of an unhealthy church. Gut check time. When we look in the mirror, okay, do we see any of these characteristics in our own midst? Do we see any of these things looking back at us? And if so, what are we prepared to do about them? Now, I do want to point this out. Despite all of its flaws, God was still able to use the church at Corinth. That's why we have Paul's letters in our New Testament. They were still a witness there in Corinth, Greek. A flawed witness, but a witness nonetheless. God was able to use them pretty much in spite of themselves instead of because of themselves. Now, so God can still use a flawed church. Thank goodness! But how much more effectively can God use a healthy church? So let's spend a few minutes talking about what a healthy church looks like. Now, if we want to look at a healthy church in the New Testament, probably the best place to look is Acts chapter 2, looking at the very first church, the one in Jerusalem. Now, this wasn't a perfect church. It had its own problems. Okay, we read about some of those in the book of Acts itself. But, at least in its early days, the church at Jerusalem demonstrated a pattern that we would do well to emulate. And it shows us what a healthy church can look like. A healthy church, first of all, is marked by sound doctrine. In Acts chapter 2, verse 42, we're told they were continually devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching. So they were grounded in the scriptures. And nearly all those experts I talked to you about, I said that, you know, I could have used their definitions. Every single one of them talks about the necessity for being grounded in the scriptures if you want to be a healthy church. This has got to be our guidebook, our roadmap. Sound doctrine. They're also marked by spiritual accountability. And you say, where's that there? Well, the fact that they were following the apostles' teachings. There was really have to go to other parts of the New Testament to see how this works. But the people were accountable to the leadership of the church. But here's a newsflash for you. The spiritual leadership of the church was also accountable in some ways to the congregation. That's got to be a two-way street. Again, if you go off in either one of those ditches, you've got problems. So the people recognized whom God had set apart to be the pastors and leaders and the teachers of the church, and they yielded, submitted themselves under that spiritual authority. But also we see the church coming together to make decisions. Who was it that set those people apart to be pastors? Well, God may have identified them, but the church set them apart and laid hands on them. So this is kind of a two-way street here with this accountability thing. And that's the way it's got to be, the way it's got to work. A healthy church is also marked by genuine fellowship. We're told again in Acts 2:42, they were devoted to fellowship, to the breaking of bread. They enjoyed being together and hanging out together and building community and building relationships. Now, here's the thing that we need to be cognizant of. You can't build relationships with people that you're never physically in contact with. You got to show up, and you can't just float in and then float out. You got to be present, and you got to maybe go that extra mile. I mean, you look around this room, in a setting like this where y'all are all sitting in rows looking up here at me, how much community and fellowship are you building? Probably not a whole lot. How do you build community and fellowship? You hang out. You eat together. You do things together. One of the reasons we push Sunday school, that's one of the purposes of our Sunday school small groups, is to get you in smaller groups where instead of sitting in rows, you're sitting in circles talking to each other. Now, there's other things that go along with that, too. It's also a place where you get grounded in sound doctrine, hopefully. But that's one purpose of Sunday school. But hopefully also you're not just meeting in your classroom. You're also meeting during the week. Let me tell you about, you know, one of the best ways to increase the stickiness factor of a church. You know, when you got new people coming in, you know how you get some of them to stick around? Make a point to invite them out to lunch after church. Now, I've seen this happen. When we first moved to Virginia, I was not on staff. I was working for a parachurch ministry then. And we were visiting around churches, and we visited this one church. In fact, it had been a church we had not originally included in our list of churches to check out. But we decided we visited everywhere else, have found that fit. So let's go try this one out. First time we went to Sunday school, a couple in the Sunday school class said, hey, why don't you come have lunch with us today? So they took us out to eat. The next Sunday, a different couple said, hey, why don't you come out to lunch with us? Guess where we went the third Sunday? We were building relationships. Yeah, it wasn't because of free lunch. But we started building relationships, and we ended up plugging into that church, and a few years later, they invited me to join the staff. And that's how we ended up at West Lynchburg Baptist Church in Virginia. But you build those relationships. Look for new people. Now, these days, you know, a lot of times people already have plans. So here's what you do, okay? You see somebody new, go up to them and say, hey, good to have you with us today. I'd love to get to know you a little bit. How about next Sunday after church, we'll go out and get some lunch? What have you done? You've guaranteed they're coming back next Sunday, right? Okay. Sunday school groups, getting together, having Christmas parties, having other kinds of fellowships. Our Dove class does this incredibly. They get together, what, about once a month? That's how you build that fellowship and that community. It takes work, but it's so worth it. So genuine fellowship. And then when you have a crisis in your life, who are the first people you're going to call? A lot of times, those people in your church you're hanging out with, right? The next thing is expectant prayer. They were devoted to the breaking of bread and to prayer. And we always see the people in the early church coming together to pray. And they had prayer meetings that shook the building. How would you like to be in a prayer meeting where the wall shook? You know what? This last year has especially taught me the value of prayer. About 18 months ago, not quite 18 months ago, we entered a 90-day period of specific prayer. We recruited people to hold prayer meetings. And we gave them specific things to pray about for our church. And God began to move. And at the end of the 90 days, some of those groups said, we want to keep meeting. So we kept sending out the prayer reminders. Now, it's hard to sustain something like that over time. So let me encourage you, if you were involved in that, maybe life got in the way, let me encourage you to come back and give it a second try, okay? Because I believe God answered a lot of those prayers last year. We were able to do a lot of the things that we did last year because people were together praying specifically for this church. And a lot of the things they prayed about, guess what, came to pass. Prayer is one of the fuels that runs a healthy church. So they were devoted to prayer. Next, another sign of a healthy church, selfless humility. Acts 2:44, all those who had believed were together and had all things in common. They shared. They took care of each other. They didn't have a lot of these divisions because they looked at each other as having all things in common because they had the most important thing in common, Jesus. We are all sinners saved by grace. We all come into heaven the same way through the cross of Jesus Christ. And as long as we keep that in mind, that will go a long way to remind us, you ain't no better than anybody else. We all need the grace of God to get by. And that'll keep you humble. So selfless humility. And that selfless humility led to sacrificial service. Look at verse 45. They began selling their property and possessions and were sharing them with all as anyone might have need. Now, every now and then, somebody will try to use this verse to teach that the Christians were the first communists. That's not exactly accurate. It wasn't like they all got saved and they immediately signed over everything into one big treasury. What this is describing, when you look at how it works in practice, is these people were doing life together. They were involved in this community that stuck together and hung out together. And if somebody came up with a need, everybody else responded. And what they would do is they would sacrificially liquefy assets to meet the need. Say somebody came up and had a big doctor bill. The rest of the church would get together and they say, how can we help this person? Somebody said, well, you know, I got this piece of property that I'm not doing anything with. I'm going to sell it and we'll give the money to help take care of that bill. That's the kind of stuff they would do. And they would meet each other's needs. If there was a need within that fellowship, people came together to take care of it because they genuinely loved each other. They also met for regular worship. Acts 2:46. Day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple. Okay, these are people who become followers of Jesus. Now, yeah, they grew up Jewish, but they become followers of Jesus. What are they doing in the temple? They're worshiping. What do you do in temples? You worship. And that was probably the only place big enough with the big colonnades and stuff that were there in that big complex. It's only probably the biggest public place where they could all gather together. And they came together at least once a week to worship together. We're told in Hebrews, let's not forsake the assembling of ourselves together as is the habit of some. But instead, let's come together and encourage each other all the more as the day draws nigh. They came together to worship. And then they practiced grateful attitudes. Again, in verse 46, day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple and breaking bread from house to house, So they had the big group meeting and they had the small group meeting. They were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart, praising God and having favor with all the people. They were practicing a gracious, grateful attitude. In Proverbs 11:27, we're told, "One who diligently seeks good seeks favor, but the one who seeks evil, evil will come to him." In other words, whatever you're looking for, whatever you set out, that's what you're going to find. You have a choice to make. Life comes at you unpredictably. And whatever life throws at you, you have a choice in how you respond. You can respond with bitterness and complaining, or you can respond with gratitude and joy. It's up to you. That doesn't mean that there are not times when it's not appropriate to grieve. But it means that your basic default, you can either react or respond. React's a negative thing, respond's a positive thing. Some of y'all know one of my daughters works for a big church down in Atlanta. Recently, their pastor did a series, and something that came out of that really stuck with me. This is from Dr. Jody Ray at Mount Bethel Church. He says, "Don't curse what you want the Lord to bless." Think about that for a second. Don't curse what you want the Lord to bless. In other words, how do you expect God to bless it if you're running it down all the time? That doesn't mean there aren't times where it's appropriate to raise your hand and say, "Hey, have we thought this through?" But so often what happens is we get bitter and resentful and we start griping and complaining. Seldom do we actually go to people who can make a difference with whatever our issue is. No, we go around to all of our friends because we know they're going to pat us on the back and say, "Oh, that's okay." You know, it takes courage to go to strangers and say, "Hey," or to go to leaders and say, "Hey, I got an issue," or to stand up in a members meeting and say, "Hey, I got an issue." That takes courage. Okay, but you'll have a lot more respect for somebody who'll stand up and raise their hand and very respectfully say, "Hey, I think we need to take a second look at this," than for somebody who goes around in the background spewing venom and running people down behind their backs. That leads to unhealthiness. It's healthy for there to be principled dissent. I wish we would make more space for that, because I know some of y'all are scared to death. You may question something that we're looking at doing as a group, but you're scared to death. Raise your hand because you've been taught all your life, snitches get stitches. Okay? We need to create an atmosphere where as long as it's respectful, as long as it's well thought out, people should be able to stand up and say, "Hey, can we take a second look at this? I have a problem with this." And we ought to be able to discuss it as grown-ups, as adults. It's one of the reasons I've been saying for a couple of years now, whenever we have a big vote, I'm almost tempted to do every big vote by secret ballot. Because I think we get a much more accurate reflection of what people really think. But we need to practice grateful attitudes and not give in to the bitterness and complaining and griping. Now, there's a couple other things to point out here. Also looking at this church in Jerusalem, what happens to healthy churches? Healthy churches grow. Verse 47, "And the Lord was adding to their number day by day those who were being saved." The Lord was adding day by day. Science teaches us that things that are healthy do some stuff. They grow, they adapt, and they reproduce. We know it's very much the same for a healthy church. They grow, they adapt to changes in the environment. One of the reasons some churches are so unhealthy is because they can't bring themselves to adapt to changes in the environment. They're still doing things like they did in 1980. They grow, they adapt, and they reproduce. And we're going to talk about that in a couple of weeks, about how important that is. But churches grow in different ways. Now, some churches grow in size, okay? More people come in. That tends to be the thing we all look at. That's the metric we want to see. We want to see more people coming in. But let me just tell you, growth doesn't always happen in size. Sometimes. But if, say, you're in a community where nobody new's moved in or out in years, that may not be the best metric to look at the growth of your church. Some churches grow an impact upon the lives of their members. One of the things I've learned, you know, being as involved in our local association as I have been, there's some churches, they may not be very big, but they produce a steady stream of deep, trained disciples who grow up in that church and then go out and do great things in other churches. So they grow in their impact. Churches also grow in their influence in the community. Twice in the last 2 months, I bumped into people and they've said, "Man, you know, I'm still talking about when I saw you guys on TV standing out there welcoming all the kids back to school." It's like, wow, okay, well, that's something good to be known for. I'd rather you know us for that and some of the other things we do, but at least that's positive. But churches that are healthy grow in influence in their community. Healthy churches are also bound together by faith in Jesus. Going back to 1 Corinthians chapter 3 again for a moment. You know, the people within healthy churches, they're not all uniform, but they are united. And they're united around Christ. As Paul says in 1 Corinthians 3, verse 11, now no one has laid a foundation other than the one which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. So what's the foundation of the church? Jesus. Skip down to verse 21, 23. So then no one is boasting in people, for all things belong to you, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas or the world or life or death, all things present or things to come. All things belong to you, and you belong to Christ, and Christ belongs to God. The idea there is, of all the other things that are going on in the church, Jesus should be the main thing. Everything should go back to Christ. That's the thing that holds us together, Christ and our faith in Him. And the more people within a church focus less on themselves and more on that common bond in Christ, the healthier both they and their church will become. I don't know if you've noticed this. People are coming to Soddy Daisy. The section of Westridge Trail out behind Sequoia High School has been closed for about 9 months because, you know, they've been replacing that bridge. So I haven't gone that way in a good while. The other day I had to drop some stuff over at their recycling place and I had to get back to Hickson. So I said, I'm going to cut through there. They got it open now. I'm just going to drive back through there and take a shortcut. Well, I got around back behind Sequoia High School and guess what I found? In the 9 months they've had that road closed, they built a whole new subdivision back there. Where did that come from? And there are new developments going on all around us. People are coming to Soddy Daisy. God is bringing the mission field to us. However, the only way we're going to be prepared to reach it is if we do the work now to become a healthy, thriving family of faith. Listen, folks, we can spend thousands of dollars and hundreds of man hours doing outreach to try to get some of those new residents inside the door. But if all they encounter is dysfunction and drama, they're going to go right back out. You can have the best preaching and the best music money can buy, but good people won't want to stick around through constant drama. On the other hand, people will put up with average music and okay preaching if they encounter genuine love. Love really does cover a multitude of sins. If we become known in this community as a church where God's truth is proclaimed, and God's love is present, that's going to be worth more than all the advertising dollars we could spend. And that's something you can't fake, by the way. You can only do the hard work and prepare the ground, prepare your hearts, and seek God, the Lord of the harvest, to bring that kind of result. About 100 years ago, the famous British essayist G.K. Chesterton wrote about a survey that a leading British newspaper had apparently sent out to several public intellectuals. And there was one question on the survey: what's wrong in the world today? When Chesterton got his survey, he wrote back, "Dear sirs, I am. Yours, C.K. Chesterton." If you want to see this church become a healthy, thriving family of faith, guess what? It begins with you. It's like the old thing they say about revival. You want to see revival, you draw a circle, you stand in it and say, God, send revival here. It starts, first of all, with owning your own immaturity. To recognize where you're part of the problem instead of the solution. And say, okay, I'm willing to admit, I'm not there yet. Maybe I'm too critical at times. Maybe I've got this proclivity to gossip. Maybe I give up too easy. Maybe too often I want to take my ball and go home. We start to own that about ourselves and we say, Lord, that's not right. Please change my heart. And then you seek Christ more deeply in your own life. And as individuals in the church become more spiritually healthy, guess what's going to happen throughout the church? As the cells become healthy, so does the body. And as the church becomes healthier, it'll do what healthy things do naturally. It will thrive. So whether that's going to happen depends on you and me. What's it going to be? Do you want to see this church be healthy and thrive? It starts right here.
This program is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church. Music courtesy of Jason Shaw at audionautics.com. If you enjoy this program, we would love to hear from you. Email us at info@newsalembaptist.net. Thank you for listening.